This week's episode is brought to you by our friends over at Heavy Play. If you're interested in getting some innovative curved sleeves, or even trying out their Equip Mag system that connects your playmat, deck box, and dice box together with high-quality magnets, check out HeavyPlay.com. Use the code DARKDEPTHS10 for 10% off your order. Again, thank you to our friends over at HeavyPlay.com. Enjoy the show. Thank you to our friends over at Magnolia Gaming, a leading supplier for all things TCG. If you're looking for a place to pick up cards for your next big event, or maybe you just want to do a draft with the new set with your best friends, use MagnoliaGames.com to pick up everything you need from Magic the Gathering, Flesh and Blood, Lorcana, and more. They have an excellent buy list to help you trade those extra modern cards for your first dual land, or maybe that old Angus McKenzie commander deck collecting dust can be traded in for the last cards you need for your collection. And be on the lookout for Magnolia Games at your next large regional event. Use our affiliate code to help support the Dark Depths podcast. Again, go to MagnoliaGames.com and tell them the Dark Depths podcast sent you. All right, enjoy the show. Dark Depths Podcast, your go-to place for the modern and legacy format. I'm one of your hosts, Billy Mitchell, and with me, the ringleader himself, Nick Lapson. How are you?
Annoyed. I am annoyed. How are you?
I am okay, all things considered. I know my day today, I think, was less annoying than yours, but it's been quite a couple weeks, so, you know, I think we're both dealing with some headaches.
So, One of my coworkers, who I really appreciate, found out is quitting. They have tremendously cut said person's salary.
Dang.
I don't really understand why, and I would, like, when I say significant, like, I am talking five figures getting chopped off. So, so yeah, I mean, I would also leave.
I would also quit.
But I don't really understand where that came from. I can get it if we're losing money, but that's not the case. So that's frustrating, especially because this person's existence kind of directly correlates with how much money I make. So I both like them as a person, and I both like them as somebody who makes me money. And losing both of those is kind of, you know, not ideal. And then my train home from work decided not to show up, and then eventually when the train finally showed up and they had three trains full of people waiting, they lied and said that this train's going to be making an express train, so we'll send this off first and it will go straight to the final destination, which is mine. And I was like, perfect. But they did that just to split us up so that you didn't have everyone trying to get on the same train and we wouldn't like fight about it, which was dumb because the people who lied to us almost got killed. Not by me, by the other passengers. But yeah, it's been, it was my day.
That's bold. I feel like anytime, and I know this is just me, you know, being a 90s kid, I guess, but anytime I hear the word, like the phrase, final destination, like, this is nothing good that's going to happen here. This is going to be trouble. So, I'm not surprised. Yeah, that's unfortunate. Honestly, my week has been, I guess, on the uptick. We are, last week, I was also, by the way, obviously we're upset we didn't get to record last week. It's in a minor car accident. Well, I don't know exactly how you define minor, but no one's injured or maimed or anything of the sort. So I think it's a success overall, if you can call a car accident a success. But we're in the process of, like, getting a new car and dealing with that headache with insurance and things like that. Thankfully, it's very clearly not our fault. So that is documented to the police report, and both the insurances agree on that. So it's a lot easier of a process than it could have been. But I'm just kind of recovering, getting back on my feet. And I've got my first AP test next Wednesday. So, like, a week from when this episode's going to drop. So I'm just kind of locked into that right now. This Wednesday and then the next Wednesday after that. And then after that second AP test, I can relax for a little bit. I've got Bridgerton Season 3 comes out, which I'm excited about. And I'm going to go see a string quartet do Adele, which I'm really excited as well. So I got a lot of things.
Candlelight concerts?
Yeah, candlelight series. Yeah, yeah.
And you didn't invite me?
Well, it's for my wife's birthday. Actually, no, it's for our wedding anniversary. We're going to go see a Studio Ghibli medley in... But I figured you wouldn't want to be the third on this date, so...
But, okay, I'll keep it in mind.
Okay. But yeah, no, it's gonna be a good time. So I'm just trying to pace myself out over the next 2 weeks and try to push through with consistency, so...
I'm not done one of those concerts yet. I kind of want to. I was a little bit worried because I am allergic to candles, so having that many really bad for me. And then somebody pointed out they can't have that many actual candles. That would be a huge fire hazard. They're definitely electric. And I was like, that makes a lot of sense, and I never would have come to that realization on my own.
Yeah, like we did one. Yeah, I'm trying to think what the artist was. Oh, it was that. No, it was an artist. We talked about this on the show, I think. It was like a horror movie themed string quartet, which was really, they did a really great job. You know, you got the Nightmare Before Christmas, and there was more traditional horror movies like Thriller. Actually, they did play Thriller, but I was thinking Psycho, like a lot of those kind of classic things. And also, they did some like classical music that is like has a horror motif to it, which was really neat. But it was like super, super windy. It was in a graveyard, relatively flat in the area that we were standing. And like, I actually thought the same thing. I was like, wow, it's so weird. The candles didn't go out. Yeah, they're electric. There definitely are some real candles on the stage for ambiance, but like, it's very few. I mean, they really just go out. You can't really have too many. And they can't be near the performers' faces either, because you don't want to have them getting smoke in the face. So definitely not, candles are not really going to be an issue for you, thankfully, unless you're allergic to plastic candles.
Yeah, I don't think so. Okay. So yeah, I definitely want to check one of those out. Love concerts. Been having a very musical year, having a very musical few weeks, as anybody who follows me on Twitter can see, as I feel like I've been at a concert every week for the past couple weeks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what's your next one on the horizon?
So I just saw Jacob Collier last night, which was really good. Highly recommend. And then my next one is not until actually the end of the month. We're going to see Aaron May. I don't know if that name means anything to you. He's not a particularly huge name. And I shouldn't say we, because I've been going to all these with my wife. My wife is not going. This is very much not her cup of tea. But it should be good. It's actually more your cup of tea. If you want to join, tickets are like very cheap. Mm-hmm. So okay. They're like the kind of thing where it's like, I enjoy him, which is why I'm going, but I'm not going because I'm like this huge fan. I'm going because I enjoy him and the tickets are cheap, so it just feels like a freebie.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like, what, like $25 or something like that?
I think they're like 30, 35, but like...
That's negligible. That's like the taxes on Taylor Swift concerts.
Yeah, so it should be a good time.
Well, I'm glad you got some cool stuff on the horizon. I guess while looking forward, I actually do want to kind of jump into our topic. I know we again, between your train and just like life in general, we're not gonna have like a long show tonight, but I did want to talk about the leaks that, you know, has been plaguing Magic for decades at this point. But I feel like the leaks that we've seen with MH3 is probably the worst, just because it's just so early to have cards leaking out of the set at this point.
So, two things. One, there's no way it's worse than when the full set got leaked that one time,
yeah,
right?
The God book, yeah. That Mirrored and Besieged, I think. Yeah, that's definitely the worst one. And that was a whole, Guillaume Maltignon, right? Was the one who ended up getting kind of blacklisted for that one. Which, again, if you're part of a team that's releasing the whole set, like, obviously a problem, so I don't particularly mind. But yeah, that is definitely the worst one, for sure. You're right.
Also, you literally said the word Horizon and then didn't use that to transition into Modern Horizons. So I just want you to know that listeners everywhere are screaming at you right now.
You know what? But you got there. Mentally, you were already there. So my job was already done. But now we said it, and now it's kind of like too obvious. So we got to pull it back a little bit. But... yeah, I mean, Modern Horizons 3 is looking to be a really cool set. And obviously, we're still kind of, like, in, like, Thunder Junction mode. But, you know, I don't know. It's very, not upsetting, I guess, but it's frustrating to see these leaks continue to happen, and I feel like I don't even know what the answer is to trying to stop that. Like, I think it's just a thing that we're going to have to deal with for the foreseeable future in some way or another.
Yeah, it's funny because I feel like people constantly complain that it's always spoiler season, so, like, you would think people would not do the leaks because people want a break, but I don't know. I guess we can just keep doing leaks and then complaining that spoiler season never ends, even though spoiler season wasn't supposed to start for another 3 weeks.
And, like, I would like to hope that, like, this wouldn't be a huge deal, but, like, there's actually... Modern Horizons is just powerful. This is, like, kind of one of the reasons why it's hard to ignore this. There's just cards that have eternal implications, like, not even, you know, eternal format, but just... You know, these are cards that are going to be played for the next, you know, however long Magic exists. I'm not sure how long it would be until something like a Solitude or a Grief isn't playable in Legacy. You know what I mean? Like, and we're bound to have more cards like that coming into the formats, respective formats, Legacy, Modern, Standard, whatever. Well, I guess not Standard, but Vintage and Included, and I guess Commander. This is just going to be a big deal to try to ignore. So I think rather than trying to pretend like this didn't exist, Wizards actually came out and actually released an article talking about this and trying to, I guess, make them the spoilers that came out, like, legit, which is an interesting strategy. I didn't expect them to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I like the way they handled it. They kind of said, hey, you know, we understand this happened. We wish it wouldn't. Since you're seeing the cards anyways, we're going to give you better quality pictures to look at. And then, you know, also, like, a bunch of jokes, haha, and kind of give extra versions of the cards and tell you more about where you'll be able to see them, while also saying, hey, these are not all the spoilers. We really wish that you would not see the spoilers, but if you're into that kind of thing, we're sure you know where to find them. So kind of like, hey, if you want it, go get it, but, like, also understand this hurts us and it hurts, like, content creators.
Yeah, and again, like, this is... Yeah, we still, like... This show has not gotten a preview yet, which I keep hoping, like, this is going to be the time. And, like, you know, I think if you're looking at the possibility of having a set that actually, you know, speaks to us and our audience, the, like, a Horizon set would be it. So it always is kind of like... double brutal, because, like, one, I don't want the previews that early. I want to be able to enjoy them in the time that they are meant to be enjoyed. But also, like, I would love a preview, and if one of these cards that end up being really cool ends up being a preview that we would have gotten, but instead they're like, eh, I mean, we had one for you, but it got spoiled, don't worry about it. Or even worse, hey, we've got this preview for you, it was spoiled, like, 3 weeks ago, but, like, you can still preview it, I guess, if you want to do that. Like, that all feels awful. Like, it feels like a very unfortunate way to, like, spoil what would be a really cool experience for a creator. So I definitely feel for anyone who's affected by this, but I'm not even sure if they announced, you know, who's doing the previews for.
I believe they have, I'm not positive, but they do figure that stuff out, like, very far in advance, so it's not like this. Yeah. Anyways, shall we get into them?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess we'll just start down, and this is an article that Blake Rathmutin had posted, the Modern Horizons 3 League, Snow, Drifters, and You. We'll post this in the show notes, so you can check this out there. So we'll just work our way down the article here. And this actually goes back to a cycle that we knew was going to exist, I think, for a while. I think the other, the green variant of this was official before. Correct, right? But this is what Flare of Denial, which is a it literally is just a cancel, right? It's a one generic and double blue counter target spell. But in addition to that, just like we've kind of seen throughout the Modern Horizon sets between you know, Fury and Force of Vigor, we also have this ability, this alternate cast ability. Here you can sacrifice a non-token blue creature rather than pay this spell's mana cost, which is, you know, a pretty nice way to be able to counter something for free. Obviously, you have to put some material into it. It definitely is a really nice way to hold.
I'm not sure what deck this slots into. I know it slots into, well, it's going to see you play in CDH, especially if you have, like, a partner general, like, what is it, K9 that costs, like, a single blue mana. You can sack this to that. It's kind of the same thing as playing Rograk. But in Modern, I can see this going into, like, the Murktide decks. If you're on Ledger Shredder, you probably don't want to sack a Murktide to it. Maybe that pushes you back into actually playing Delver of Secrets or, like, Terramander. Probably not, but, like, it could happen. Definitely seems like it could fit into Merfolk in Modern or Legacy. Or, you know, there's always the chance to just, like, doesn't really see play as well.
Yeah, the one I was kind of hoping for was, like, maybe this is the chance for Snapcaster Mage to come back, right? I don't think the timing works. I don't think it really works the way I want it to, like, rather than paying the, like, Snapcaster would give this flashback, but, like, I can't pay the alternate cost for it, I think, similar to what we did with Force of Will, right? So, but at the very least, it still is a blue creature. We can use that to return some value, maybe get back, like, a Fire Ice or something like that, and then still have Flare of Denial to counter a spell. Like, that's still decent. I would take that.
See, could also play this card with creativity if you play Hard Evidence again. I mean, that's probably going way too deep. Oh, yeah, never mind.
Yeah, it has to be no token. That was part of the issue that I was kind of having, because I think Hard Evidence would be 100%, I think, where I would want to start. But the non-token blue does actually... I was actually thinking, too, like, I wonder if there was, like, a way you could, like, pair this with, like, an evoke creature, like Subtlety or something like that, but, like, I don't know what situation you'd be in where you'd want to Subtlety something and also Force of Denial it, but maybe you just have to pitch Subtlety so you can cast the Flare of Denial. I don't know. It's an option, I guess. I mean, that still is like a turn zero counter spell if you need that.
It sounds terrible. Three cards.
It does sound horrible, yeah. I would agree. But it could be, the other thing I was kind of thinking about, it would be interesting to do that if you are looking at some, what is its name? Tishana's Tidebinder, right? That's going to be, like, turning off an effect anyways. Like, you know, you're turning off the Subtlety, whatnot. Like, you'd sacrifice it instead. Like, that might be, I don't think cute, but, you know, I think there's enough, like, triggered abilities. Like, Omnath is another one that comes to mind that is, it is blue. So having that, being able to sack that to Flare of Denial if you really need to, it's not the worst thing either. I think the one I'm, like, most excited for, probably just for EDH reasons, is, make sure I say this right, because I'm assuming this is pronounced the same way, like, Cthulhu would be, so I'm going to say Chthonian Nightmare, which is black in a generic for an enchantment. When this card enters the battlefield, you get 3 energy, which is cool to see energy back as a mechanic. You can pay X energy and sacrifice a creature, return the nightmare to its owner's hand, return target creature with mana value X from your graveyard to the battlefield, activate only as a sorcery. And again, like you mentioned before in the article, they make a bunch of little jokes. So I have this recurring nightmare where I forgot to do my homework and also half the set leaked on the nose. But I do like this card. I think it's, you know, really
interesting. I'll be honest, I'm not excited about this card. I know people love themselves a good recurring nightmare, but I just, like, I don't know. The energy mechanic is not particularly interesting because you're so limited with what you could do with it. I kind of appreciate that they're bringing it back despite what I just said, just because, like, more options means maybe there's actually something you can do with it moving forward. But, like, they even said at the time, right, like, this mechanic was very parasitic and we should stay away from doing mechanics where it's, like, entirely self-contained, like, it doesn't work with other things very well. And like, it works with Proliferate, I guess, but, like, I don't know. I just am not excited to see this be a thing. And, like, I don't know, maybe they do enough where it makes a deck, but I also just don't love, like, hey, this deck exists because Modern Horizons, like, completely made it exist. I don't mind Modern Horizons boosting things, and, like, it definitely has created new archetypes, but I don't want it to be, like, I'm playing 10 cards from Modern Horizons.
I mean, as a DRC Ragavan player, I actually love it personally, but I do see your point where it's kind of frustrating to have a set that isn't really made with the intention of being a standard format. I don't know why that matters to me so much, but I actually like having sets or cards that are introduced to Magic, but they are introduced at lower power levels, so we kind of see how they graduate towards. Like, Deathrite Shaman is kind of the perfect example, where, like, it was standard legal, it was fine, and then it became playable for a little bit, and then Modern and Legacy, it was doing hot nonsense, and still does hot nonsense in Vintage, the only place it's not banned, but, like, I guess then also Pioneer it's legal in, too, right? But, like, I like the idea that, like, those cards can actually kind of filter their way through Magic's history. You can see the impact, things like that. Cards like this just, like, show up. And like, this is kind of my, this is my big issue. It's just, like, I don't like when cards just appear one day and, you know, it's a complete overhaul. Sometimes people like that, and I know you're in that camp where, like, something like having Lurrus Delver all of a sudden or Breach in Legacy was a very exciting thing. Like, this is not exciting to me as a player, but it is kind of cool to see this kind of niche mechanic on the face of a card that I think could be pretty powerful. I think there is some combo potential here. I'm not sure exactly what it is. Obviously, in EDH, it's very clearly good with Dockside Extortionist, which, I mean, what card is not good with Dockside Extortionist? Yes, but, I mean, otherwise, this is a card that I don't really seeing a lot of play. Like, Modern or anything like that. Like, I'm not sure exactly what deck is trying to bring a creature back from its graveyard necessarily. I mean, maybe there is something that I'm missing, or you know, maybe we're gonna go to zombie town here, but I don't know.
So for what it's worth, I think the cards trickling through standard thing is actually for a lot of people less about the cards trickling through standard, but just the effect that entering that way has versus a set like this. Because I think a big difference is the rate at which cards come out. Like, this feels weird because all of a sudden you just have like 50 new cards versus you get like two or three new cards and you kind of have time to adjust to the change. Like, it just feels like the changes are more minor when they come through standard, even if the card is, you know, just as powerful as something that could come in through a set like this. I think that is a big difference.
Yeah, for sure. If we're looking at cards, and actually, I'm actually very happy this does not trickle through standard. I don't think this card would be good to have in a standard environment. Ugin's Labyrinth, which just as a map artist type, I love the artwork of the Ugin's Labyrinth. It is a bunch of Zendikar Hedrons in this circling pattern. It's intricate, and it's deep, and it's wide. I feel like I'm getting off topic here. The card is very interesting, though, and I'm sure it's going to end up seeing some play, because I think it's the only Tholand we actually have in Modern right now. This would be a land. It is a mythic, by the way. It has imprint. So when Ugin's Labyrinth enters the battlefield, you may exile a colorless card with a mana value 7 or greater from your hand. You can tap for a colorless, but if a card is exiled with Ugin's Labyrinth, you add 2 generic instead. So if you have your Ulamog that's going to be exiled with your Ugin's Labyrinth, then you on turn 1 have access to 2 mana, which means you got like turn 1. What would you do on turn 1 in Modern with 2 mana?
So Chalice of the Void is going to be a big one. Another thing is less about what you're going to do on turn 1 with 2 mana, but more what you're going to do on turn 2 with 3 mana. So this allows you to play Simulacrum Synthesizer on turn 2, which has been popping up in both Modern and Legacy recently. We didn't get the chance to talk about it last week, but that card has been spawning kind of a rebirth and affinity in both formats. And let me tell you, that deck is fun. And that strategy also works very well with this because you get to play cards such as Sojourner's Companion and Thought Monitor. If you want to go deep, you can play Mirror Enforcer, and those are the 7s you get to exile very easily, and then you get them when it matters, and then they're still cheap because of the affinity, so you don't even need the soul land anymore, so it all kind of works perfect. You can also use this so that you can actually copy the same Urza Saga on 1, Soul Land on 2 play pattern you get in Legacy. I'm sure you could use this to fire out Nettle Cyst a little bit quicker as well.
Yeah, like I definitely could imagine, like, I think that deck you're talking about, like, just the blue deck playing like Patchwork Automaton on turn 1 and then just proceeding to continue going off seems really, really hot to me. But also, like, we still have, am I right, Eldrazi Temple still legal in Modern as well? So that could be a second possibility.
Correct. It is legal.
So maybe there is some kind of deck there that would allow you, I don't know, obviously not Patchwork Automaton, but, you know, just the more opportunity to get a turn to Thought Not Fear is always something that I'm happy to have it a try.
Definitely another option. They're really supposed to be pushing Eldrazi this set, so I'm sure we'll see plenty of that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there's definitely, I'm going to jump around just a little bit in the order here, just because you were mentioning the Artifact deck, which I think is, you know, one of the decks that has been popping up recently. There's a lot of interesting changes. I guess can you talk about the deck? I know you've played it a little bit. What is that deck? What's new about that deck that's making it so popular right now?
So to be clear, I have not played it in Modern. I've only played it in Legacy. Simulacrum Synthesizer is a sick card, and it's got pretty cool artwork. I'm bummed because I just lost out. I was bidding on buying the original art for it. Man, that auction skyrocketed at the last second. Yeah, that's okay.
I thought you were bidding on something else too, so I think hopefully you'll get that the second one.
Yeah, I actually have 2 bids out right now. Well, I actually just got outbid on something. I will probably come back. But I was also thinking about bidding on another card. Anyways, so Simulacrum Synthesizer, for those who have not read it, 2 and a blue mana for a 3. I mean, obviously it's a 3 mana artifact. When it enters the battlefield, you scry 2. And then whenever you cast an artifact with CMC 3 or more, then you get to make a construct. And yeah, it's just very powerful. So like if you get to play that on like a turn 2, and then you can just follow it up with like Frogmite, like I don't know, Thoughtcast or like Thought Monitor or whatever, and you have just put such an insane amount of power onto the board. The fact that it is an engine card that actually works with itself, you know, like a lot of times you get cards where it's like, hey, this does this cool thing, but then you have diminishing copies or diminishing returns on the second copy. Like the second copy is just as powerful with the first one already out. So it's just a very strong effect and is really letting the artifact Stompy decks kind of move in a more aggressive direction. It's kind of awkward because I think your floor gets a little bit lower. Like when the deck's not doing anything, it's really not doing anything. Because like Frogmite, it's not a strong magic card. And Sojourner's Companion, like, is also, it's like, okay, you have a 4/4 ground creature. Like, I have a Murktide Regent.
But, what do we do now?
Yeah, but when it works well, you just, like I said, you have the games where you get to go like turn 1 or 2. Synthesizer, and then just like I had a game where it was like, I can't remember if it was turn 2 or 3, and I just like looked at the board and was like, I have 86 power in play. Like, how do I lose?
Yeah, that's pretty good. And like, there's definitely some cards, I think, this is obviously just a coincidence, right? I don't think it's, maybe it was made with the environment in mind, but we are also getting some new additions to the Artifact deck and versus the Artifact deck. One of the big additions for the Artifact deck is Kappa Cannoneer, which obviously has been a card in Legacy for, I guess, a couple of years now, but a really powerful card, and it's coming in Modern Horizons 3. So this is going to be, a card that really slots in directly into that deck.
Yeah, it was quite strong.
Yeah, I mean, the turtle, for those who haven't seen it in Modern at least, it's a 5 generic and a blue for a 4/4 turtle warrior. It has improvised as well, so you can tap artifacts to make it a little bit cheaper. So if you are just throwing out you know, we'll say welding jars and frog mice and things like that. It gets very easy to cast this ahead of the curve. It has Ward 4, so it's very easy to protect, especially if you're getting it into play by turn 4, right? It's hard to have a removal spell that would deal with this normally with 4 toughness, and then also have 4 mana to pay for the nice. And when it comes into play or another artifact enters the battlefield under your control, you put a 1-1 counter on Kappa Cannoneer, and it can't be blocked this turn. So in this deck where you're pumping out a ton of constructs, like, you're going to end up having a relatively large Kappa Cannoneer that's going to be just as large or larger than some of those constructs, but also be unblockable. A very nice way to close out a game.
Overrated. I want my opponents to block and feel the despair as their board dwindles. I don't want to kill them.
Well, I mean, if you want to kill some stuff, I got a card for you, because they got Meltdown also in the set. Which, honestly, like, even just aside from modern implications, I'm just happy this card is getting a reprint, because it's just an expensive uncommon from Urza's Saga, I believe, right? The Gears. So this is a much-needed reprint for the Legacy crowd.
I have mine, so not concerned.
Well,
the rich get poorer.
That's fine. Again, if we live in a world with $5 duels, I'll be very upset for a while until I have all of my duels. And then I'll be okay. Yeah, so I'm excited to see those. Definitely some interesting additions there. I know one of the cards that you actually were bidding on, I don't want to blow up your spot here, is White of the Reliquary. Do you want to talk about that card?
I don't want to blow up your spot, he says, as he does it. Nobody else bid on this card. I bid on the sketch. I am debating if I want to bid on the painting as well. I wanted to, and then I saw the price, and then so I'm currently trying to decide how much I'm willing to pay for it. I don't like the art nearly as much as Knight of the Reliquary, which this card is an homage to. Yeah. But I do think it would be really cool to own. So I'm just kind of debating. It also doesn't matter because I know whatever I bid, I am going to get outbid, and I am not going to want to win in the end. So, like, it doesn't matter, sure. But I have to figure out, you know, just how disappointed I want to be. But anyways, yeah. Card costs a green and a black, so Golgari mana for a 2-2, sounds familiar, with Vigilance. Mm-hmm. It is a zombie knight, and when White of the Reliquary gets +1/+1 for each creature card in your graveyard, and you can sack another creature to search your library for a land and put it onto the battlefield tapped, and then shuffle your deck. This card is weird, to say the least. So, you know, it is similar to Knight of the Reliquary in certain ways, especially in the appearance, but it's also very different. Being a zombie is a very notable creature type, as opposed to being a human. The Vigilance is really nice. If Knight of the Reliquary had Vigilance, the card would be even more insane. And getting +1/+1 for each creature card in your graveyard reminds me of Fiend Artisan, and which is fitting because I know Newton is already talking about throwing this card into Cradle Control. And the ability, you know, you still get a land, but sacking a creature to do it is interesting. So there's, like, a lot to think about, because I would say sacking a creature for a land often going to be a downgrade, but not always. It really depends on the creature. You also get to do potentially cool things, like Bloodghast immediately comes to mind. Sack Bloodghast, get a land, bring back the Bloodghast. Similarly, if you sack a Gravecrawler, you can just replay it because you have a zombie, and then you get to ramp. If you have Hakan in your deck, you get to do cool things that way as well. If you want to be really cool, you can play a single blue enchantment that costs 2 and a blue. You can play Intruder Alarm, or you can play Retreat to Coral Helm. Either one would work. So if you play Intruder Alarm with Bloodghast, then you can keep untapping this white, keep getting your Bloodghast back, and just get every land out of your deck, which means that you're just going to draw a cast for the rest of the game, which is something that is very strong that you can set up as soon as turn 3. And then If you have Retreat to Coral Helm, it's a very similar effect because you have landfall, untap it. So you would need creatures to sack. And again, it works with Bloodghast. But yeah, those are...
Worm, yeah.
I didn't think about Xantid Swarm. So those are just some initial ideas for things you can do with this card. I'm not really sure what the best application for it is. One of the things that's kind of awkward is in Modern, I don't feel like you have those value lands that you want to get necessarily. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely, there's things you can do.
Yeah, I mean, I think having the ability to sacrifice just like any creature, I think is actually really nice too. Like, this is something I kind of expected to see, like non-token as an additional cost here, but just any creature is fine. So, I mean, the big one that I think is, I don't say underrated, but I didn't quite think about would be getting something that just helps develop the game plan further. So, like, if you're talking about this in Legacy, maybe this actually slides into a deck with Veteran Explorer. Like, this would be a really nice follow-up there, be able to crank that out and get, you know, three lands. Maybe you get your the Stronghold, Volrath Stronghold. Yeah, in addition to your two basics. Like, that seems like a really good combination there. You could put your Veteran Explorer back on top and just do it again and keep looping through your deck like that. That seems more than fine. And obviously, like, being able to get Gaia's Cradle just seems really good. Even going into, you know, just in while we're in Legacy, just being able to search up Tabernacle seems like a really good answer, especially since you can do it at instant speed. It doesn't really matter if the land comes into play tapped or not in that case. In Modern, it is interesting, too. I don't know exactly what deck would want this card, but it is kind of nice that you can tutor up Dryad Arbor, right? If you're playing the Yawgmoth deck, that's a very easy card for you to be able to tutor up with a basic and then go find whatever land you want. If you want to go find like the Underground Mortuary or whatever, the green black surveil land, that would be a really nice way to kind of sequence into that. Especially if you're talking about that deck anyways, right? Like, Yawgmoth is so commonly just sacrificing creatures, getting them back, and also just making random 1/1s with Grist. Like, there's a lot of just, like, fodder for you to throw around if you really want to, or if someone wants to, like, you know, awkwardly try to bolt your, we'll say, Fiend Artisan, right? Something of a high-value target, right? Like, okay, well, worst-case scenario, I'd get a land at a deck here. Like, that's not too bad. Yeah, I'm excited for that one. That seems like a cool nod, and I think, like, the last one, I think I remember that was kind of like a nod, like a kind of a tongue-in-cheek, was like the, was it Champion of the Perished? Was that the one? Was that in Modern Horizons 2? Or was that in Innistrad? Innistrad sets. But, I mean, like, in addition to, like, the land tutoring theme we seem to have here, we also have Urza's Cave, which is notably actually in Urza's land. Like, it is part of that subtype, which I think is really cool. So we have Urza's Cave. It is a non-basic land, tapped for a colorless, super boring. Moving on. No, I'm kidding. It also can three and tap, sacrifice the cave. You can search your library for a land card, put it onto the battlefield, tap, and then shuffle. Which, you know, that also does the same thing. It allows you to go get whatever land you want. Maybe that is your Gaia's Cradle. Maybe that is your Volrath Stronghold. But also, it could be like, you know, Cloudpost or Vesuva. I think this being colorless is really interesting.
And I could just be too negative, but having a land that taps for colorless is often not good enough for most things. And then it just, like, its effect, its tutor effect is so slow and not repeatable or anything. Like, I don't know. It just feels like decks that care about lands have better lands to play in them than this. And I don't know, you get this effect in so many places, and I just think this is kind of worse in all of them, right? Like, and I mean, it's different, right? It's not strictly worse necessarily, but I would say this is worse than Expedition Map. Well, maybe not. It's probably, like, roughly the same. Not being able to get it off of Urza Saga, I think, makes it contextually worse. It's worse than, like, an Elvish Reclaimer. It's worse than a Crop Rotation, I would say. Yes, it's, you know, a land, so you're not going to have to worry about it getting counterspelled, but three versus essentially four, actually, versus one is a huge difference.
I mean, I do want to note, though, because it is a land, it gets back with Life of the Loam. So, like, this is a thing you can mill into your graveyard, and then you can use that to actually search for the land you want instead of having to, like, slow roll and hopefully mill that, you know, that tabernacle. I mentioned about that before. Like, it's nice to have, like, another silver bullet that helps find other silver bullets. And again, maybe that's not what you want, but it's nice to kind of have a land that is able to go into your library as opposed to one that is able to go into your graveyard like we already have with the Echoing Cave or whatever that more recent one.
One of in lands, I just kind of would be surprised if it sees play outside of that. Again, I could definitely be wrong here.
Yeah.
But I am not impressed.
I think that's reasonable. I mean, like, I think either lands or I guess
Cloud. I have no interest in playing this in post.
Already so good at finding. Yeah, I just don't think that's probably not the home for. I don't think it needs it in that deck. You're more than capable of finding what you need by itself. This doesn't really seem like a great addition. And I know it's an Urza's land too, but I don't even know if this is something like you would play in a like a Tron. Like I think if you're keeping a hand that depends on you spending turn four searching your library for this with this card for another card so you can have Tron on turn five, you probably should just not be playing the deck, or you should be mulliganing more aggressively to just have Tron naturally.
But we should probably speed up as we go through these. The next one is Spawn Gang Commander. It is Siege Gang Commander, except it's an Eldrazi, and you can figure out the rest from there. Which means it's probably not good enough for Constructed, but it's going to be a banger in Limited.
That is true, yeah. I mean, just getting the three Eldrazis is pretty sweet. You get three Eldrazi spawns when you cast it, not when it comes into play. So, you know, enjoy your free spawns. But yeah, I'm not... It's kind of whatever. I think this actually might be a really cool card if you play Pauper EDH. This would actually be a really cool commander, but I'm not super interested in this in any Constructed sense for right now, at least. Again, maybe there's something that comes out later, but this does not seem... This does not spark joy. Yeah. Is it Felia or Felia? I'm assuming it's Felia, like Ophelia. I would also
lean towards Felia.
Okay, so Felia, Exuberant Shepherd. It is one generic and a white for a legendary good girl. She has flash, so I don't care what anyone says. So Felia, she's adorable. She's perfect. She is a 2/2 with flash. Whenever Felia, Exuberant Shepherd attacks, exile up to one other target non-land permanent. At the beginning of the next end step, return that card to the battlefield under its owner's control. If it entered the battlefield under your control, put a 1/1 counter on Felia. There are definitely some things here that I think would be interesting. Obviously, not being able to get rid of tokens or anything like that. I'm silly. This is a exile up to one other target non-land permanent. So you actually could exile like an opposing token or something like that at the very least. But you get to do some kind of stupid stuff like... And again, like, I'm mentally thinking about this in the context of maybe, like, any or something like that. But, like, being able to, like, flicker a Mana Vault or flick Grim Monolith would actually be a really interesting way to kind of abuse this. But you could also just, like, reset your Unring if you're doing this in Modern or Legacy, which I think that seems pretty good to me. It is a 2-mana permanent. It's white, so Death and Taxes also seems like a really interesting spot to put that in. Maybe you end up flickering your Solitude, or maybe your Yorion. That does not seem like the worst thing to
do. You know, I feel like it's a white card, it goes into Death and Taxes is the joke, and I think this one actually does. I mean, again, full transparency, I'm really bad at that deck. I should probably actually try to take the time to learn it for real. But I do think this card actually seems reasonable. Another cool thing that it does is it can reset a Chalice to zero. It can reset an Aether Vial. And the fact that it's, you know, legendary means you can actually keep it safe with Caracas. Because at first I read it and I was like, oh, that's cool. But it just like dies to everything in combat, but the fact that you can save it with Caracas means that you can kind of get repeat effects off of it. And like, yes, you have to spend mana to do it, but having like kind of a slightly delayed Flicker Wisp that you get to keep rebuying seems reasonable.
Yeah, no, I'm on board with that. And you know, I think keeping it in the deck. And again, like our friend Evan has been playing a lot of that. I've been watching his stream, so I'm just thinking about like that variant of the deck that's like black white focused. Like being able to just like exile a like Bowmaster and like put it back into play does not seem like the worst floor to have. There's just a lot of interesting they come into play effects that you end up getting, and I think being able to be able to use this card at the very least, even just to like get rid of a blocker for a turn, is like not the worst floor. I would really like to live the dream in like Felia in like Grief, and just live that dream and keep like, you know, getting more triggers off that card, because that's obviously the thing that's holding back Felia at this point, and just black in general. Like you need more trigger effects. But like also while we're at it, like, you know, you've been playing a deck, or I'm not sure super recently, but the Reanimator deck is actually, you know, another deck that, you know, I've been going and seeing. I think it'd be really interesting to bring back your Atraxa and then just attack with Felia and exile your Atraxa. Just have another way to kind of reset that outside of Ephemerate. And also this is legendary too, so it actually gets is something that could be targeted by Goryeo's Vengeance.
True. I guess. I don't think I really want to be getting this back with Goryeo's, but it could happen.
Well, I'm just saying, if you have double Vengeance, right, like, getting back, you know, maybe the first Goryeo's Vengeance gets Atraxa, the second one gets another Vengeance, you already have Ophelia in your graveyard, but you don't have the Ephemerate, like, this would be a good replacement, at least in that case. It's still 4 mana instead of 3. Obviously, Ephemerate would probably be a better option for you, but, like, could do worse. Also, if you murder Felia, you're a jerk. So, just putting that out there, it's just canon now. Don't be the person who kills the dog.
That governor.
Then you end up having to deal with John Wick. Isn't this? Corgi. Yeah. Talking about Felia?
I was making a topical reference to, God, I want to say it's, have you not heard about, what is her name, Katie Rom, I think, the governor who was, like, bragging about killing her dog?
What?
Yeah, no, I mean, I didn't hear about kind this. Of jealous, because it's pretty sad.
What?
And so a lot of people were, like, obviously awful. Very upset, because that's not how you treat an animal. We here on the Dark Depths podcast do not condone shooting your pets. We love our pets very much. No. And I love Billy's pets, and I'm pretty sure Billy loves... Well, pet singular. I'm pretty sure Billy loves my pets. Yeah. Don't...
Oh, God.
Don't condone that.
Well...
No.
Well, yeah. Okay. I know we have to end soon, so let's wrap this up with some good closers.
Mole Drifter. Everybody loves a good mole. Mole Drifter, you know, now it costs 7 mana and is an Eldrazi. And yeah, this card's kind of cool. Unfortunately, they said cast. It would be, so you can't do cool, like, ephemerate things with it, which is, like, possibly for the best, but still tragic.
Well, no, you still can. I mean, if you're casting,
it's not cool,
when you cast the spell, you draw 2 cards. I mean, I'll take the Mole Drifter, and you can still do the
Ephemerate. I don't want to Ephemerate it. Like, I don't draw 2 more cards. It can die. It's dead.
It has Annihilator 1.
It's dead to me.
you got a 4/4 with Annihilator 1. What more do you
dead
want?
Dead to me. Next card, Haragist, Erupting Nullkite. I don't know. I think this card's just bad. Do you think this card is good? Like, do we even read it?
Yeah, which... I actually do think this card is good simply because, I'm actually a little less on this. This is a weird card. Like, I really wish there was a card that would make more sense for us to want to emerge. It again, the emerge cost is 8, which is around that number where it gets kind of unusable. Like, 7 is kind of the sweet spot, like Elder Deep Fiend. 8 is a little bit harder. So, you know, something like Fury would be nice, but that's not even modern legal. I don't know what you'd be getting into play that would survive. Again, I think if you're doing, like, we were talking before about doing, like, the affinity creatures, I can imagine that being good, but I mean, otherwise, it's kind of hard to imagine this being wild, but maybe, I'm sure something will come up out of this. And, like, there's a couple other cards, too. I don't think we need to talk about Kudo unless you've got some cool green-white bear situation that's gonna make that card the hotness.
No, but the art looks cool, so I do appreciate that.
Yeah, I do want to, I'm expecting to see an altar of this that is, like, the Bear King from Brave, so just expect that from Modfly at some point. Null Elemental Blast, which is an interesting card. I don't think that's playable. I don't... it's one colorless, specifically one colorless, not one generic, but one colorless. For an instant, choose one counter-target multicolored spell or destroy target multicolored spell in that same realm as Red Elemental Blast or Blue Elemental Blast, just targeting specifically multicolored spells. I don't think that's playable.
Per se. One, really? You get to cast it off of Urza's Saga, which is one of my favorite lands. Two, Tron.
Sure.
Actually, so as much as I don't want to say call a card a banger and then talk about Tron, one of Tron's problems, which there are a lot of, in current Modern, is it's very not good against Ren and 6 plus Pasaju, which means that it can struggle against Omnath strategies, and this card stops Omnath, and it stops Ren and 6. And this card would be better if you could play it in Pioneer, where it would be really good against the Omnath decks there, but I don't know. I still think this card's cool. It's not going to take over the format, but I think you're underrating it.
I mean, just like in terms of Modern, I'm just like thinking about like getting to stuff them on that expressive iteration. I guess is fine. It does counter Grist. Like it does some cute things. But again, like if you're playing Tron, I don't think you really care about Grist necessarily. I think a lot of the cards that interact with you the worst, this doesn't actually address. Ren and 6 is, I think, the one notable exception that does significantly help there. But, like, unless I'm missing something, like, I don't think you're going to worry about too many multicolored spells. Like, I'm still... And again, like, Tron's not a deck I play. Maybe we should ask Ryan instead. I'm sure he would have a better opinion on this. But I feel like you are just kind of in this spot where, like, the card does a lot of cool things against decks that would otherwise not be an issue. Like, I don't know if Tron particularly struggles against, like, the Omnath strategies outside of... I'm not sure how many holes this is actually patching.
We agree. Next card, Nethergoyf, which is just, like, Power Creep Tarmogoyf. It is Tarmogoyf that costs black and has Escape for 2 and a black. That's nuts. Tarmogoyf is, like, barely played, but this card is just strict improvement. And I feel like the black-green deck in Modern is, like, often underplayed. And it seems like whenever it gets picked up and played for a little bit, it seems to do well. So I can definitely see Black-Green Saga just playing 8 Goyfs and being very happy about it. Oh, it's your graveyard.
I don't know if you're baiting me or not, but this does...
It's
your graveyard. Yeah, it's not strictly better.
You know, I actually misread it. And then when you started, I was like, well, clearly I missed something.
Okay. What? He never starts off like this. What is going on? Yeah, no, it's only your graveyard. And it's still good. Like, and I think it actually does kind of help having that strategy. If you're talking about... Nethergoyf, it makes a lot of sense to have Nethergoyf and have, you know, Stalagmite Stalker. You can still play a lot of those things. The Urza Saga actually looks pretty good there as an enchantment that you can add to the list. You can still go thing that gives you +1/+1 and lifelink and trample or whatever. The artifact. It doesn't matter. Shadow Spear. But like if you're playing in that kind of realm already, throw in your things that make your like your Mishra's Baubles and things like that. Go ahead and throw in the Sagas. We can even splash red, you know, get red and six in here too and go back into that kind of like Jund Saga realm. Like I'm actually on board with that. I think that sounds really cool. I'm not super in love with it though, simply because the escape cost is just like so high. Like, you know, exile any number of other cards from your graveyard with four or more card types among them. Like Saga obviously does some heavy lifting there, being an enchantment. But like I'm not trying to get rid of like it'd be that and then getting rid of like an artifact and a creature or maybe a land. I guess you already got rid of a land. I feel like it's wouldn't be one of those things that like you very quickly you can just probably escape it twice during a game, but like the fact that it is gonna make the rest of your cards just all worse is upsetting.
Just upside. Right? Like I think this card is even with me misreading what the card does, I think this card is just playable without the escape text. Mm-hmm. So the escape text is just gravy. Like, I don't think you can look at it and be like, ugh, I wish the escape was better because the card's already good without it.
Like, just being, I guess you're right, being a 1-mana 3/4 on turn yes. 2 is probably just fine. Like, also, if that's the floor.
I just want to call out because I mentioned the green. Black Saga decks, like the green black XX, and I forgot to bring them up earlier when talking about White of the Reliquary. Mm-hmm. There's also going to be times where you just like have that in play, mm-hmm. and you top deck a grief, and you just get to go, okay, like turn two, like you don't have the scam effect, but you just get to go, okay, cast grief with the Vogue trigger on the stack, sack it, get a land, and that's also solid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I actually like that too. Just like even you do the same thing with Endurance too. So it's something you could do at the end of turn and help kind of ramp and set up. That way you're resetting your opponent's graveyard, but also giving up a land with where they didn't expect it. Like that could be a banger there. So, okay, I like that. I know a card that you are probably a fan of, Sylvan Safekeeper. 1 green for a 1/1 human wizard, sacrifice land, target creature you control gains shroud until end of turn. We're getting shroud back in the format, baby. Does this actually make the jump to modern? Is this actually modern playable in the year 2024?
Like with Flagstones and Titania, which is a deck people have played before. It's not going to suddenly jump to tier 1, I don't think, but like it will be fine. That's about where I'm at with that.
Yeah, I mean, like, my big hurdle to jump here is just being 1 toughness in a format that has a number of Ren and 6 and also Orcish Bowmaster. It just seems like a precarious place to be. Obviously, it does give creatures Shroud, so that could be good for it. But it seems like a card I would imagine you would really be happy to see instead of, like, a Giver of Runes in, like, a green-white Heliod shell. Like, I could imagine this being the thing. I'm comboing off now. I've got my Safekeeper. You've got to interact with me now or you're gonna die. But it doesn't actually work there either because it gives it Shroud, not Hexproof. So you can't actually target and put the counters on. Well, I guess you can target. I'm trying to think. You'd have to target in a specific order, right? If you were giving, like, Ballista Lifelink, you'd have to have that resolve before the Shroud.
It doesn't work. It still stops it.
I guess once you're... It still stops it? Oh, because the Heliod puts the counters on Ballista. Yeah, so, like, it just seems like a really awkward spot for that card. I'm not sure exactly what deck would really be happy to have it. I'm sure there's something. I'm sure, but I can't think of... I guess in the other vein of flashbacks that I'm not quite used to, Orym's Chant is another one, too, which... You know, 1 white for 1 white and also has kicker for a white. Target player can't cast spells this turn. If the spell is kick, creatures can't attack this turn. This seems like another thing where I can't imagine in the year 2024 that someone's going to be like, You know what? I'm going to bust up my Asynchron Scepters. Let me get some Orym Chant going.
I mean, I can see people doing it. It just won't be great. But Orym Chant is just an upgrade over Silence and Creativity and Hammer. Also, the borderless artwork is really nice.
Oh my gosh, it's beautiful, yeah.
So, Winter Moon. Yeah. Banger.
This is my favorite, yeah. I think this is easily the best one out of the bunch.
I hate it as a card. Sick artwork. Sick sick flavor text. Wish it didn't exist, but also good job. Winter Moon costs 2. Players can't untap more than one non-basic land during their untap steps. We don't need to go too far into it. We've played against Winter Orb before. We know it's miserable. We've played against Blood Moon effects. We know they're miserable. This is like a weird combination that is miserable. But again, even though I hate it, it is actually all around very sick. So I begrudgingly respect it.
I just think it's really interesting to have like Blue White Control have a main deckable like effect like this. Like this is something I could imagine not being embarrassed to be like, oh yeah, I played 3 of these in my main deck. I just fetch for basics and I've got my, you know, not Utopia Sprawls, but this is like in that same vein as like super annoying things that like I understand why it's in your deck and I hate you for it. And I think having the ability to set up the game where you're like, I'm going to cast my Counterspell, I'm going to cast a Teferi, I'm going to cast a, you know, whatever. It doesn't really particularly matter. Your opponent's only playing one spell every second turn because they need 2 mana for this and they need 3 mana for that, but they're playing land drops, but they're only untapping 1. It's really hard to keep up the pace in the game when you have such a huge mana advantage and you're drawing multiple cards. This is a really interesting card that I'm expecting to have a huge effect on both Modern and Legacy.
There are 4 cards left. They are in the Commander product, which is infuriating that it exists. It's very clear that we have nothing against Commander, but these cards are not Modern playable, which having them in a Modern Horizon set and then not being Modern playable just like kind of makes zero sense. The first one is Siege Gang Lieutenant, which is actually kind of a cool card, but is like utterly unplayable outside of EDH, so we're going to skip it. The next one is Final Act, which is What If Farewell was black. So again, it's not Legacy playable, and we are going to see EDH players complain about it just like they complain about Farewell, but also they're right because that card is miserable. But then two that are actually worth discussing to end. March from Velis Vale, which is 2 and a blue for a sorcery. Choose a non-basic land type. Each land you control of that type becomes a copy of target creature you control until end of turn and gains haste until end of turn. And then it can flashback for 4 and a blue.
So, obviously, I'm not a very smart man. when they say choose a non-basic land type, do they mean, like, I can have everything be a volcanic island? Or can everything be, like a waste? Like, what am I able to choose with a non-basic land type?
It's a basic land type, you silly. Well, is it technically a land type? It doesn't matter. I don't actually remember. So don't quote me on that.
Planar Nexus actually does explain what some of the non-basic land types are.
Yes, so
which is the last card.
They are caves, deserts, gates, flares, locusts, we're going to come back to that, mine, power plant, sphere, tower, and Urza's. So you could, like, if you're playing, let's say, Tron lands, which, again, you cannot play this in Modern, but let's say you have your Tron lands in Legacy, you could turn all of your creatures into, like, Karnstrucks or into whatever else and just suddenly kill your opponent.
Yeah, the one... Obviously, this card is just kind of bizarre in a lot of ways. It being a gate is actually kind of relevant, again, to Commander, just because there are a limited number of gates for the Keen Finger, something, Nine Fingers, or something like that. That was an issue with that deck. I'm actually interested just because we have seen in the last year an influx of caves, we've seen an influx of deserts, gates as well. So it's interesting to have those be things that we can potentially kind of rally around going forward. And even with the Locust, right? Because Thought Post is a Locust.
To be clear, I don't think this card is actually good, but it's cool. The other thing you can do with it is there's that card, was it Biomancer Visionary? Where if you have, like, I can't remember how many copies of it in play, you win the game.
Yeah, I think it's like
four. I was going to say five.
Wow. I think it's only four.
I mean, that makes more sense, but I want it to be five, because then it's cooler.
That is true. That's true. That would be cool.
I wanted to double check, but apparently I don't actually know the name of the card.
I forget what it is.
It's Biovisionary. But it's at the beginning of the end step. If you control four or more creatures, you win the game.
Yeah. Name Biovisionary.
Yeah, I thought that was... Sorry, I just assumed that was okay. Clear.
To make it short. Yeah, so, like, that is... definitely something you could do. And that actually is kind of cool. You know, each land you control becomes... that type becomes a copy of target creature. That'd be a really interesting way to close the game out. Obviously, that means you're combining this with, maybe it is, combining it with the Urza's Lands or something like that. But it is a very interesting thing to imagine, like, a deck that has, like, the Tron Lands, in addition, has, like, Urza Saga, it has Planar Nexus, and suddenly you can very easily get, you know, five copies. And that's my one thing, too, is, like, I feel like you need a card that is just really gross in multiples. I'm not sure what that exactly would have to be. Like, I'm not sure if you're playing at this point, but there was, like, a Patriarch's Bidding deck that would bring back, I think, like, Champion of Laquatis or something like that. It was, like, a five-mana creature, I think, from Torment, but when it came into play, your opponents each lost five life, and when it left play, they gained five life, but you would just have... you know, three or four of them come into play, they would lose 15, and I think you have it backwards. I don't know. It was an undercrossed creature that killed your opponent. But, like, that's one of the situations. Like, I don't know if there's a card like that. I think Biovisionary, like you said, is probably the best example of something that would be just super gross in multiples. Because we're talking about a copy, it has to be something you already have in play. It also can't be a legend, so, like, like, I wouldn't mind having, like, five champions. Oh, could be Kokosho. Kokosho would be really good. So I'm not sure. But, like, I don't know what that deck looks like. The Biovisionary deck makes a little bit more sense, it being three mana. I can imagine that being something I kind of build into. The Dragon being six, maybe that's a little tough. But, I mean, you could do some interesting things there. I'm getting into, like... The days of greater good where you could, like, try to loop Kokosho or Yosei or something. I'm not sure if there's something there or not, but again, I'm interested to see if we collectively can
final card is every non-basic land type, which means it is a Locust, which means Post gets to play additional Locust, and it taps for colorless, which is fine. And then you can pay one and tap it to add one mana of any color. So you're telling me I get to play extra Locust that I can actually use to filter into green mana. I don't know how I'm fitting this into Post, but I know I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the... Not, I don't think one of the main issues. Not
there's no issues with getting
over here. No, there's, the deck's perfect. It remains unchanged for years. I do too. That's very few changes. But the one thing I think that is kind of nice, like, I have seen the play pattern where you're like, okay, well, I've got my knight in play. I need a second green source, but I need to make sure I keep my locust count high enough. Like, this is something that can filter, keep your locust count high enough, and you can just use that extra mana to filter into Nexus, not relevant when you have only one Cloud Post, but if you have the second one, now you're at least up one mana. So you get that kind of cascading effect there, which is...
This card is very good for that deck. You know, I could be wrong, because I'm not sure where it fits in, but I do believe it is good. It's also nice, because it's just another untapped land on turn one. And it's not like you don't have, you know, a fair number of untapped lands, but like having a Locust that you can play on turn one to play your Pithy Needle is like really nice. And then you can on turn two play like a Glimmer Post and then filter into green and make an Elvish Reclaimer, and then you can just like go off from there.
I don't know. I don't think this is a fair criticism, but the art for this card, if you told me this was Rupture Spire, I would not be shocked. If you also told me it was Terramorphic Expanse or Evolving Wilds, I also would not be shocked. I actually think there is a version of Evolving Wilds that has basically the same exact art. But that's not anybody's fault. I think it's kind of hard to show a cave, a desert, a layer, a locust, a mine, a sphere, an Urza's all in one picture. So I don't know what I was kind of expecting, but it definitely does just look like, you know, Terramorphic Expanse. I think if you move the art over, I don't think anyone would notice for weeks.
I think this art is actually pretty fitting. I just wish the blue portion in the middle was a bit bigger. I feel like it should be more of a focus than it is.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. All right. Well, this is obviously just a kind of a, not a sneak peek. I mean, like, I think this is a good way to kind of address what's going on with, and again, if we don't get a preview because of these people, I'm going to be mad, but I'm just going to pretend we weren't going to get a preview and move on. We should probably wrap up. I know it's late. Mapson, where can people find you?
You can find me at Expedition Map on Twitter and just there. Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Bad Luck Bandit. If you're actually going to be, if you are playing CEDH, which I know is some portion of our audience, I actually am going to be at Cloud City, I believe, this weekend in, I think it's Emmaus, Pennsylvania. They've got an event, the guys from Play to Win Bunch. But it's a very cool store, Cloud City Games. I mean, are they Magnolia Gaming levels of cool? Maybe not. Magnolia Gaming, obviously being one of our sponsors, lovely place to get cards, great buy list. Definitely check them out. As well as our other sponsor, which, you know, with their mag technology, is Heavy Play, I think, is one of the best brands that we have. I've seen them all over the place. It's really cool to see them starting to expand. And talking about expanding, they actually have a new deck box, the 133 Plus, which is larger than their previous deck box, which was 100 double sleeve cards. This one can fit 133 double sleeve cards. It is wonderful if you need to fit in those tokens or you want to get that entire commander deck and get those extra things in there. It's a good choice. So definitely check out both our sponsors, Magnolia Gaming and Heavy Play. With that, I guess I'll see you next week. All right, bye.
Gavin Maya taps with green, the scene sees Reclaimer. Untap sack of flagstones, go seek the plains. Then tutor up the stage, so pull out your playbill. Doctor's podcast starring Billy Mitchell and Michael Mapson on the microphone. Dripping in Mox Diamonds, the collector of curtains up on act one of this magic show. Setting the forest so dense it looks decomposed. With red LeCrevy knights clash against Death Shadow. On the legendary lake covered in ice and snow. Underneath the surface lurks a lonely evil. An avatar so dark it could cause upheaval. The knight lunges forward, going for the kill. But Death Shadow's too tricky, it just won't sit still. Its stubborn denials compile a stack so thick. The bazooka bug emerges with Gurmag's angling. The knight takes a swing at the zombie fishes, but falls submerged for such a distance. Forsaken in the haze of the street wraith's fringes. Who wanna stuff her out, they don't sneak forgiveness. Her final breath draws a deafening silence. A sound so sinister, no one could describe it. It's like the subtle cracking of a turtle shell, or the surgical extraction of emerging hell. The shards of ice feel a force of vigor. The looming fear releases, growing bigger and bigger, until a demon's fingers linger toward the shadow of death. An all-consuming hush. The land goes swept, the night washes up, frozen on the ice. Dryad Arbor saw her out in the green sun's light. An expedition map suddenly unfurls, revealing Merit Lage has rearranged the world.